we will probably chat more about that. We are going to continue our reports coming up in 45 minutes at about 7:45. And our good friend and regular Monday or Tuesday morning visitor, Bob Konzemius, is not feeling well today, so he will not be joining us. But we will complete our reports. We have four more reports to cover, and we will get to those in the next hour. So stay tuned for that. And if you are a teacher, or if you are homeschooling, or if you'd just like to get involved in phenology, send a note to KAXE, comments@KAXE.org, and put phenology in the subject line, and somebody here will direct it to me, and I will direct it to Charlie, because Charlie's the one who does the computer work. Mm-hmm. I don't. I'll do my best, and I will respond to any notes that I get, but I must tell you, it is actually Charlie who carries the load here when it comes to computers. So, but we would be happy to get in touch with you and get you set up, and it's a new year and a new phenology coming your way. Lots of new things to watch for as we move into spring, although you might not think too much about it, but there are a few signs out there, and we'll talk about them coming up on the Phenology Report in about 20 minutes. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Coming up, we bring you local news with the Up North Report. We are hearing about some of the local vigil and protests over the weekend. We've got photos at our website, kaxe.org. Slight chance of drizzle and snow. We've got schools around the region running 2 hours late. That includes Deer River, Floodwood, Grand Rapids, Greenway, Hill City, Nashwauk, Keewatin, and Northland Community Schools. So take it a little slow on the roads. And we're expecting tonight overnight lows 1 to 7 degrees. During the day today, 35 to 38. There'll be some winds out of the north tonight, up to 30 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny, highs 11 to 16. And evening lows 5 below to 1 above. And Thursday, right now, it's looking like some snow is likely with 1 to 4 inches possible. Sing it up.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report.
We reject violence and lawlessness. Say her name. Renee Nicole Good.
An estimated 300 people gathered Friday at a Bemidji vigil for the Minneapolis woman who was shot and killed by an Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent last week. The vigil at the Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox statues downtown included music, poetry, and a lantern ceremony on Frozen Lake Bemidji. It was one of many gatherings that took place over the weekend in rural Minnesota. A rally in Grand Rapids on Saturday featured an estimated 350 people holding signs for good, as well as encouraging ICE to leave the state. An indoor gathering in Brainerd on Sunday included a candlelight vigil and connection event. Organizer Sherry Kloa with Indivisible Bemidji says the gatherings are vital for a sense of community in these polarizing times.
It's our hope that we can provide a bit of space to grieve for Renee Nicole Good, to honor her life, and make visible the human cost of ICE's actions throughout our country, and hopefully a bit of space to heal, knowing full well that this fight is not over.
Sarah Larson of Cass Lake volunteers with two Indivisible groups, one in Bemidji and the other in Hubbard County.
Because we need to speak up, and if we don't speak up, it's just going to keep going and going and going.
Indivisible Bemidji is one of thousands of indivisible groups across the country, which prioritizes grassroots organizing for a progressive democracy. Attorney General Keith Ellison announced today he was filing a lawsuit on behalf of the state and Minneapolis and St. Paul, asking the court to end what he calls a, quote, unprecedented surge of federal agents. The lawsuit cites militarized raids, unconstitutional and dangerous stops and arrests, and numerous instances of excessive force leading to the diversion of public safety resources and the shuttering of metro area schools. Valley News Live reports ICE activity in Detroit Lakes, with agents reportedly being spotted in numerous locations. While rumors of sightings of ICE agents in Bemidji circulated over the weekend, none have been confirmed as of Monday afternoon. Bemidji Police Chief Mike Mastin states in a Monday memo that his office has not been notified of any planned immigration enforcement activities in the city. He adds the Bemidji Police Department is responsible for upholding state and local laws and would not be proactively involved with immigration enforcement on behalf of federal agents. His office may respond to demonstrations and protests to ensure the safety of people practicing their First Amendment rights. He also reminds all that it is unlawful to obstruct immigration enforcement operations. Mastin advises bystanders to maintain a safe distance while observing ICE actions. A request for comment from ICE was not returned as of Monday afternoon. Tribal leaders across the state are condemning what appears to be racial profiling by ICE agents in the Twin Cities, and they encourage tribal members and their descendants to carry documentation of their first citizen status. Indian Country Today reported on the temporary detention of a 20-year-old Red Lake Nation descendant in the Twin Cities Thursday. The Oglala Sioux Tribe of South Dakota says four of its members were recently detained by ICE agents. Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Chairman Farron Jackson issued a tribal service announcement Monday. He advises any band member detained by ICE to call Tribal Council Administration. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, the White Earth Nation, the Red Lake Nation, and others have temporarily waived fees for tribal IDs. Minnesota's tribal nations are also hosting tribal ID processing days at their Twin Cities offices this week. The first new mine on the Iron Range in decades is in the final regulatory steps needed to open. Mesabi Metallics facility north of Nashwauk is within months of beginning production, nearly 20 years after work first began on the site. Pre-mining work is already underway. Permits for the mine were first issued back in 2007 and have been amended as the project started and stopped periodically. The company is now in the amendment process for its permit to mine from the DNR. It is also amending the air, wastewater, and wetlands permits from the Pollution Control Agency. The PCA will host an informational open house on the permits from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Wednesday at the new Nashwauk Keewatin School. Mesabi Metallics is hosting a pre-meeting gathering from 4 to 5 at its Nashwauk office. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we've got more news from a national perspective. We're learning about how the Minneapolis state and local officials in Minnesota are suing the Department of Homeland Security. Stay tuned for that story. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Slight chance of drizzle and snow during our day today with high temperatures 35 to 38. Temperatures falling through the day with overnight lows 1 to 7 above.
We have announcements that many area local area schools are running 2 hours late.
And that's right.
The list is...
It includes now Pine River, Bacchus, I'm seeing in there, 2 hours late. Reamer, Hill City Schools, Grand Rapids, Deer River. Let's see. Floodwood, I believe, was in that list.
Anything up the range?
No, I'm not seeing that.
How about
Greenwood?
Bemidji? Closest.
No.
Okay.
Unless you know, you might
kind
know.
Of localized, apparently. The roads are icy, so be careful.
Mm-hmm.
We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
I take that back. Nashwauk Keewatin is running 2 hours late as well.
We receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Two states have filed new lawsuits against the Trump administration. Illinois and Minnesota both allege the administration went beyond the Constitution in its immigration enforcement. The hottest attention right now is on Minnesota, where an Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent shot and killed Renee Macklin Good last week. The FBI has moved to investigate that shooting on its own, excluding state authorities. In a few minutes, we'll hear a former U.S. attorney from Minnesota about that approach. We begin with the state's lawsuit.
NPR's Sergio Martinez Beltran is reporting from Minneapolis, and he's with us now. Good morning, Sergio.
Hey, Michelle.
So what can you tell us about some of the allegations in this lawsuit?
Yes, state officials say that during this federal search, federal immigration agents have arrested peaceful bystanders, that they've detained U.S. citizens and fired chemical irritants at demonstrators and others exercising their First Amendment rights. The lawsuit also alleges agents have racially profiled people. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison says all of this is unconstitutional.
We ask that the courts will end the surge of thousands of DHS agents into Minnesota. We ask the courts to end the DHS unlawful behavior in our state. The intimidation, the threats, the violence.
Now, the Trump administration is pushing back on these allegations. Homeland Security spokesperson Trisha McLaughlin accused Ellison of prioritizing politics over public safety and called the allegations of racial profiling false, saying, quote, law enforcement uses reasonable suspicion to make arrests as protected under the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
Sergio, you've been out there and you've also reported on immigration enforcement actions elsewhere in the country. So what's standing out to you about the situation in Minneapolis?
There are more than 2,000 federal agents in the state. So there's a lot of immigration enforcement activity, especially in the Minneapolis area. Yesterday, Michelle, I witnessed multiple instances where immigration officers questioned people about their immigration status, and it didn't seem like a targeted operation. I saw them briefly detain a man despite him telling them he was a citizen. In another instance, agents questioned drivers who were charging their electric cars in a parking lot. Joel Kilika is a permanent U.S. resident, and he showed proof of it to agents. I talked to him afterwards, and this is what he told me.
We don't want this to escalate. As you see, you know how it's going right now. People are getting killed. Yes, we just got to do our best out here to make sure that we live to see tomorrow. You know what I mean? Yeah.
In a statement, the DHS spokesperson says ICE does not randomly arrest people or conduct operations without specific objectives, but it's unclear why immigration agents chose to question Kilikai and the others who were charging their vehicles. They were people of color, and all of them produced documentation that showed they are in the U.S. legally.
What are you following in the next couple of days?
Again, Michelle, the way these immigration enforcement actions are being carried out is something to watch for. Another thing that's clear, many people in Minneapolis do not want ICE around. And it's starting to seem like residents are more defiant, willing to protest more. We've already seen federal agents use pepper spray and tear gas to quell some of these protests. So the escalation in enforcement and protests is something I'll be paying attention to.
That is NPR's Sergio Martinez Beltran in Minneapolis. Sergio, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's talk more about the investigation into the killing of Renee Macklin Good by an ICE agent. We've called Anders Folk. He's a former U.S. attorney from Minnesota and current candidate for Hennepin County attorney. He's also a partner at the law firm Jones Day. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning.
How common is it for the FBI to exclude local authorities from an investigation as they're doing here?
It's certainly not common in Minnesota. Our longstanding practice here has been to use our State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. We often call that the BCA. And in my experience as a federal prosecutor, Steve, we always would get our best outcomes when we had our state BCA working as partners with federal law enforcement.
Why would that be? Does the state have some capacity that the feds do not?
There's certainly additional capacity by bringing in state agents, and I think what really, in Minnesota at least, is the case is that our state BCA, Steve, has really developed the subject matter expertise to do thorough investigations in these officer-involved shooting scenarios.
How does the FBI approach in this investigation compare to the investigation of the murder of George Floyd a few years ago in Minnesota?
Yeah, that's a good data point to look to. And Steve, I can tell you, as somebody who was involved in that investigation and who signed the indictment of Derek Chauvin for violating George Floyd's civil rights, that was an investigation that was conducted by FBI agents, certainly, but there was also a thorough investigation conducted by our state BCA agents. And so this decision to exclude our state law enforcement agency from doing an investigation is a change of course.
So what do you think about the FBI going it alone?
Well, I think, you know, any investigation is striving not only to get to the bottom of what happened, but to build public trust and credibility and to show accountability in the outcome. And by excluding our state BCA, I think this is going to have a negative impact on the public's impression of what happened here.
You know, so many of us have been looking frame by frame at the various videos of this shooting and asking, like, what do we know so far? What questions are still unanswered for us about the timeline and everything else? What questions are on your mind? I assume you've been looking at these videos, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the reason we need an investigation, a thorough, impartial, and non-political investigation is so that we can answer these questions in a way that's credible. I mean, I'm certainly curious about and want to find out what the autopsy report says. I think it's important to investigators to figure out whether what the first shot, the second shot, or the third shot that was fired in this incident was the shot that killed Ms. Good, if we can figure that out. I think the fact that her cell phone was present in the car is going to obviously reveal potentially significant information that's important to making a determination in this case, to interviewing agents who were present on the scene, reviewing evidence about what kind of training agents were given and what kind of training they were given about the use of force in situations involving cars. Data like that, information like that, is all critical in making a determination about what to do.
I can imagine why, but why don't you make it explicit? Why does it matter whether the first, second, or third shot killed her?
Well, certainly one issue here is going to be why the agent used deadly force. And to the extent the agent's positioned in front of the car during one shot versus on the side of the car during other shots, that's going to be critical to determine whether there's a self-defense issue here and why the shots may have been fired.
Can I ask about one other aspect of this that's been very much on my mind, especially after the agent's own video, which is, I think, about 47 seconds is shown. And if memory serves, roughly the first 34, 35 seconds, things are very tense. The agent is circling the car. There's a woman taunting the agent. But things are relatively calm. And then immigration agents very suddenly escalate the situation. New guys approach the scene rapidly, cursing and screaming, not screaming, but saying profanely, get out of the car, get the F out of the car. The driver appears to move the car, maybe panicking, I don't know. And then suddenly there are gunshots. That all happens in a second or two. Did the agents escalate the situation, in your view, in a way that is notable or important to understand?
I think certainly everybody's interactions at the scene are important to making a determination about what happened here and whether it was lawful or not and whether or not charges are appropriate. And so I think in a case like this where events happened very quickly, it just highlights the need for a thorough investigation. And I can tell you, having done these investigations as a federal prosecutor, it is important to have all the facts at your disposal so that you can make the right decision when you're trying to analyze what happened and why and whether or not a crime was committed.
It made me wonder that even if we find out that the agent was legally justified and there's a lot of latitude for law enforcement, there may have been an opportunity to de-escalate that situation that was missed. What do you think?
I think that's one of the facts that's really important. And again, that one of the types of facts that an investigation is going to be required to determine.
Anders Folk is the former acting U.S. attorney from Minnesota, current candidate for Hennepin County attorney. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Prosecutors have identified the 19-year-old man charged with arson for setting a fire in Jackson, Mississippi's only synagogue, Beth Israel Congregation. Mississippi Public Broadcasting Shamir Muhammad has this report.
Stephen Spencer Pittman made his initial appearance in U.S. District Federal Court Monday via video conference. He laid in a hospital bed as he was read his rights. According to court documents, Pittman told the FBI he lit the fire because of the building's Jewish ties, calling it a, quote, synagogue of Satan. The synagogue's security cameras show he broke into the building and doused rooms with gasoline. Fire investigators determined the fire was intentionally set. They found a torch. Zach Schimper is the president of the Beth Israel Congregation.
You can do as many preventative measures as you want to, but if somebody wants to hurt a person or a people, they're always going to figure out a way.
The affidavit says an app showed Pittman traveling from his home and stopping to buy gasoline before heading to the synagogue. Pittman texted his father from outside the building. When he was confronted about burns on his ankles, hands, and face, he laughed. The father, who hasn't been fully identified, contacted the FBI. The building was not completely destroyed, but the synagogue's library was left burned beyond recognition. A Torah that survived the Holocaust was saved by a glass container. When the judge asked Pittman if he understood his rights during the initial hearing, he responded, "Yes, sir, Jesus Christ is Lord." NPR was unable to reach the public defender listed in the affidavit for comment. Reverend Les Hegwood is with St. Philip's Episcopal Church, a church directly across the street from the temple that supported the synagogue when it was firebombed in 1967.
First thing was offer our prayers of support for that community and then our facility.
On Monday, Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves said in a statement, this heinous act will never be tolerated and the perpetrators should face the full and solemn weight of their actions. Pittman was an honor roll student at a Catholic school in the Jackson area. He also attended a community college where he played baseball. State charges remain pending, and additional federal charges may be forthcoming. Pittman is due in court next week. For NPR News, I'm Shamira Muhammad in Jackson, Mississippi.
This is NPR News.
It's 7:20. Coming up, we've got nature for you. Phenology, the national news, student voices, John Latimer. That's the kind of mix that you get. Great music. Malachi Coon's coming up at 9 o'clock for Headwaters.
Yeah, it'll be a fun morning. I like Malachi's music. Mm-hmm. It always keeps me engaged.
We heard from Noah in Britt this morning. He says, good morning from our homestead. With the warming temps, our honeybees become a little more active, and some may be surprised to learn that even in temperatures in the lower 30s, bees can be seen moving around the hive entrance. Also surprising in these temperatures, the bees do what are called cleansing flights to clean the hive of dead bees and other waste. As the sun warms the snow, dozens of dead bees can be seen around the hive, some many yards away. Opportunists like the chickadees are quick to notice, and by the end of the day, all of the fallen bees are eaten up. Our ermine is still very successful at hunting around here, and pine grosbeaks are still coming to the feeder, about a dozen or more at a time. Older bucks around here have lost their antlers, but the young button buck that hangs around still has his. Also captured an eagle on the trail cam, enjoying a snowshoe hare.
All right.
There is a phenologist, I'm telling you.
Yeah. That's a guy who's paying attention and enjoying himself at the same time, yeah. I hope. Yeah, wonderful notes. I've had some experiences over the last week that brought me hope and excitement, and we'll talk about those coming up on the Phenology Show in just a moment. Support comes from the Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience, located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
Slight chance of drizzle and snow with high temperatures 35 to 38, temps falling through the afternoon. Overnight lows expected 1 to 7 degrees, and tomorrow sunny, highs 11 to 16, and evening lows 5 below to 1 above. Looking ahead to Thursday, looking like we could get some snow, 1 to 4 inches possible.
Do you rely on KAXE? Are you at least 70 and a half years old? Supporting KAXE's future is easy. Ask your financial advisor to set up charitable IRA distributions to KAXE. Questions? Call Sarah at 218-326-1234. And I am over 70 and a half, and I do take my minimum required distribution each year, and I earmark some of that money for KAXE, and it's really easy, and the nice thing is I can take that money out of my account and give it to KAXE, and I don't have to pay any taxes on it. Mm. If I take the money out and I want to spend it on, I don't know, cigarettes and beer, I'm going to have to pay taxes on that on both ends. I'm going to have to pay taxes on the money, and I'm going to have to pay taxes on the cigarettes and the beer. And lucky for me, I don't smoke cigarettes, so I'm saving that.
Yeah, save a lot of money that way.
On the other hand, the beer, although my beer budget is still within reason. I can still afford it.
We do have some schools running 2 hours late. We'll run through those. The Northland Schools in Reamer, Nashua, Keewatin, Hill City School District, Pine River, Bacchus, Greenway, Grand Rapids, Floodwood, Deer River, all running 2 hours late today due to the icy roads, drizzle and snow this morning.
We received support from Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at brainstormbakery.com. It's time for the Phenology Show, as soon as I get done beating the mic around. Sorry. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And this time of year, you know, sometimes we, you know, in January, we fall into those moments where we just sort of despair and say, nothing's changing. It's just cold. It's just winter. It's just, yeah. But that's only because you're not getting out and looking carefully at things. I had the opportunity to go out on a couple of really interesting hikes this week. One I took with my good friends Craig and Lauren. It was Saturday was Lauren's 70th birthday. I reminded him that I used to be twice as old as he was. I was 14 and he was 7. Now he's just 7 years younger than me. He's 70 and I'm 77. So anyway, Lauren and Craig and I did some walking and looking, and we came across a couple of things that I found really interesting. And sometimes it helps to have other eyes, because for some of us, it almost becomes commonplace. We're walking along, we're up on top of a ridge, and we run across these very red stems. And the question was, is this red osier dogwood? And the answer was, after closer examination, no. And a couple of things that can help you know when you come across these red-stemmed plants, whether or not it is the red osier dogwood, which is quite red. Well, they both are. This was round-leaf dogwood. And round-leaf dogwood is taller than red osier dogwood for the most part. It is usually red on the newer growth, but not red near the ground on the old part of the stem. That can kind of turn gray. And so not red to the ground. Taller, not red to the ground. Both of these dogwoods have opposite branches. So you're going to have a branch on the left and a branch on the right. And lest you be confused, check the buds. If the buds are opposite, that's the same as if the branches were opposite. So, but the round leaf dogwood tends to grow on higher ground. Most of the red osier dogwood that I find around here grows either in ditches or near lake shores, nearer water than, say, round leafed. Now, that's not a hard and fast. But if you're down along the edge of a lake, or if you're in a ditch that you find is generally pretty wet, and you come across these red shrubs that are maybe 4 feet high rather than 6 or 7 feet high, and they are red from top to bottom or bottom to top, that is probably the red osier dogwood. And if you hold on to that image for a while, in the springtime, when they leaf out, the red osier dogwood has a kind of a elliptical-looking leaf. It's narrower than it is long. The round-leaf dogwood has that, a big round leaf that is nearly as wide as it is long. And that is probably one of the early and easily definable notes that you can find. The other thing about dogwoods, the red osier and the round-leafed, is that the round-leaf dogwood flowers in the spring and is done. And the red osier dogwood flowers throughout the summer. If you find a red shrub in the woods in August that has flowers on it, and maybe if you look carefully, berries as well, that is red osier dogwood. pardon me, that quick lesson there. The other thing that we found as we were walking along was this big old tree had blown down, and we weren't able to get a really clear definition of which species it might have been. We were in a mixed forest of basswood and aspen and balsams and birch and whatnot. And this tree that had blown down, we tore off some of the bark, and the inner bark was very fine, very thin, and something that John Zazada had taught me, it turns into really good cordage. And he used to take off big slabs of this bark and set it in the lake, and the water would help to separate these inner bark layers that were thin, but very, very tough, very long-grained. So they were very, very tough. And if you braided that stuff, you had a pretty good bit of cordage when you were done. So we found that this was basswood. And then as we walked around in the forest, we looking at this and that, and we came across this little shrub, little stem, and looked at it, and the buds on it were bright red, really red. Not quite fire engine red, but definitely red. You would have looked at them and thought, these are even brighter red than the red osier dogwoods. And those are basswood shrubs or basswood shoots that are going to become basswood trees. But the basswood has that bright red bud. And the other plant out there that we ran into a little bit of was my big purple buds, opposite branched, everything's there but the name of the plant, red elderberry. Thank you, brain, for coming to my rescue. The red elderberry is covered in these big fat purple buds right now. So there's some color out there if you get out and kind of look carefully and check things out. And while we were doing that, we came across some tracks of the short-tailed weasel. Well, I put it in my notes as a short-tailed weasel. I didn't actually see it, but I saw the tracks. Weasels, if you were listening earlier, belong to the mustelid family. The mustelids are, well, starting with the small ones, weasels, and then mink, and well, weasels, marten, mink, otter, fisher, and wolverine. And I may have missed one in there. And there are some subdivisions. There are three different kinds of weasels, and so on and so forth. But all of them have the same sort of gait when they run, and that is there'll be two tracks just staggered from one another, and then a gap, and then two more tracks, or sometimes you'll see four tracks. If you think of these animals, they're all sort of long and thin, and they sort of hunch up when they run, and when they put their back feet down and spring forward, there's going to be an arc, and then 2 feet will hit the snow. In this case, there was a spot where it was about almost 20 inches between the two tracks where the weasel had taken a leap. And prior to that, there were places where you could see he kind of scraped his belly as he was not jumping quite as hard. But short-tailed weasel, and then, as I mentioned, my good friend Kavor Johnson had sent me a picture of a otter track along the Mississippi River, and our own Kari Headland had also a picture of otter tracks here at KAXE. Anytime you have open water in the winter, you have an opportunity to see lots and lots of animals, because water is absolutely necessary for every living thing. And a lot of birds and animals get water from the snow. But if there's open water available, it saves them a lot of energy because they don't have to melt the snow in their body. They can just eat or drink the water that they need. And the Mississippi right here below the Blandon Dam is open, and there are a lot of critters that are hanging out here. And if you have open water near you, I'm sure if you walk down along that open water, you will see lots of tracks. Craig and Lauren and I went up to Little American Falls as part of our journey on Lauren's birthday, and there were tracks there along the water's edge, open water there at the falls, and so there, water is an attractant to a lot of critters, and this time of year, if you have open water or if you know where open water is near you, go to the edge and look at the tracks, but don't go out on the ice, because if there's open water, whatever ice is nearby is certainly not anything to be trusted, will not hold you up. My daughter and grandson are in town, and yesterday morning, just on demand, I wish, a coyote walked through the front yard, and my daughter was by the window, and she goes, "There's a coyote in our yard." And we all flocked to the window. My grandson got to see a coyote out in the wild right in the front yard. Very exciting for all of us. And, of course, the dog saw it, and then things got a little, they tended a little toward the mayhem end of things. But we kept them in the house, and the coyote was sort of unimpressed with their barking. I don't know. I know coyotes are smart as the dickens. And I suspect that this guy was like, whatever, you go ahead and bark. I feel confident and safe. And as we walked around yesterday, we came across some bobcat tracks out in the snow, and that was always exciting. I had looked at my game cam. I pulled my game cam card in, and we looked through that. Lots of deer in that camera, and lots of coyotes, and a couple of bobcats here and there. So it was, as always, with the bobcats, I almost never see them. I've only seen a couple in the wild in my life. They're there. They're just really cautious, and they hear, see, and smell you well before you get anywhere near them, and they quickly make every effort to get away from you. They are not wanting to hang out with you. This past week on Wednesday, I had two bald eagles come to the nest right at sunset. And on Friday, the same, I assume that eagles don't poach other eagles' nests. But on Friday, two more eagles came to the nest and settled on the nest. And a third eagle flew by. And I don't know, who he was, who it was, whether it was just one hoping to find a mate or if it just saw these other two eagles and thought, oh, check that out. I don't know how that worked, but I do know that there were three eagles by the nest on Friday. While we were walking up by Little American Falls, we came across a juneberry, and we got to looking at it, and some of the buds on the juneberry had actually, I wouldn't say they'd cracked open, but the juneberry bud tends to be covered in these fine white hairs, especially the seams on the buds. And these buds were definitely hairy along those seams. So if you're out and you find a bud that's kind of got these little fine white hairs on it, chances are it is one of the juneberries. Mentioned last week that the white spruce needles were falling. And yesterday I noticed that the balsam fir needles were falling as well. Had a conversation with John Allmendinger, and he was completely unimpressed. I won't say unimpressed. John was is an excellent forest ecologist and botanist. And he just told me, oh, it's just how it goes. They drop their needles when they feel like it, and sometimes it's midwinter. And that's what's happening right now at my house with white spruce and balsam. I noticed, too, that the birch tree that I have on my phenology checklist, so I have this one birch tree that I watch very carefully. Last year, lots of flowers, lots of female flowers, lots of seeds fell on the snow. This year, no flowers and no seeds on the snow. And in a lot of areas around my house where I would have expected to find birch seeds, now I am not finding them. So I guess whether or not that's true everywhere or just the birches around my house decided to have a lot of seeds last year, but no seeds this year. I don't know. We'll know later this spring when we start looking to see what kind of female flowers form. As I mentioned earlier, there have been a fairly large flock of common golden eyes here on the Mississippi River, right below the paper mill and right in front of the studios here, and some Canada geese. These birds spend the winter here. As long as there's open water, they don't mind. The cold isn't something that disturbs them. They just need a good supply of food. And if they have that food, they're going to be just fine. One final note, and this one is one that I've been waiting to see. And that is there was an incident between one of my cottontail rabbits and either a barred owl or a great horned owl. I haven't heard any barred owls calling from my neighborhood. I have heard the great horned owl, and this was obviously an owl kill because there were no canine tracks, no dog tracks, nothing, just a rabbit missing a lot of its body parts, including its head, and a couple of little wing marks on the snow where the owl had come in and swatted that rabbit. And I've been waiting for that. I have a lot of cottontail rabbits at my house, and I knew that the owls were sooner or later going to make some of them into owl tissue, and that's what they were doing. And we just left the pieces there in the front yard, kept the dog away, and the very next morning they were gone. So the owl came back and finished his meal, and we are down one rabbit, but the other rabbits hanging out around the bird feeder, it's like it never happened. They don't seem to be, you know, it's like, well, what happened to Joe? I don't know. I haven't seen him in a while, but at any rate. And I guess I should mention, too, that last night, my overnight low was 33 degrees. And that is rather unusual for January. So don't forget to be listening for the chickadees to sing their Phoebe songs. I did a quick rundown of the dates, and those occurring in December equal or are greater than those occurring in January, but there are lots of them for both those months. The latest I ever heard my first chickadee Phoebe call was in 2022, when I didn't hear them until the 18th of February, but other than that, December, pretty much the whole month from the first to the last, and January likewise, first to last. So be listening for the Phoebe call of the chickadee. It should happen soon. And there should be some woodpeckers drumming in your neighborhood pretty quickly too. So there's a little phenology out there for those of us looking real hard for spring. Let us know what's happening in your neighborhood. We love to hear from you.
You can check out the Season Watch podcast where you hear some of John's report and more on what folks are seeing. Last week, I got a chance to talk to Marshall Helmberger, he wrote a column last week in the Timberjay newspaper out of Cook Tower in Ely of the lynx that he had for a full week.
Oh, my.
Visiting at his house over the holiday.
Oh, nice.
And eating a deer carcass that Marshall had found on the road and pulled into the yard. And so he had a full week with it until the wolves found out. And, you know, so he's got some amazing photos and video of, he said it was acted like a cat, you know, just aloof and didn't care if people were around, and he kept having people over and to watch it. And
wow.
Yeah. It was quite something. You'll want to check out the photos at timberjay.com.
Nice. Yeah. What a thrill. I can remember talking to Jerry Niemi at NRRI out of Duluth, and they initiated a research project on lynx to find out how many there were in Minnesota, because there was a time when, you know, the DNR would tell you that no lynx in Minnesota, they just aren't here. But they are here, and their numbers are, I won't say considerable, but they're certainly here. And what they did was they put these little scratch pads out with a lynx scent on it, and the lynx would come by and smell it, and then they'd rub up against it to leave some of their own scent on it. And by collecting those hairs, NRRI was able to take DNA samples, and once you get the DNA, you're kind of like, okay, we got six different lynx here that are leaving hairs on this pad. So, yeah. Wonderful, Marshall. I envy you and your friends who are able to get there and see that.
We heard from Dennis from Eveleth this morning saying, good morning to the two of you. Brackett and I, that's the name of his dog, isn't it?
Okay.
Brackett and I, Sunday morning, were walking, and he was alerting me to a snowy owl. That was great.
Wow. How nice. I got a chance to talk to the third graders over at East Elementary, and they had a snowy owl there, and what happened there were they noticed in the snow that there were five holes sort of in a row, and they were curious about what happened. And I said, well, the owl hears a vole underneath the snow, and it makes an attack, and maybe it misses, and then it hops, and then it, and this owl was just catching up to the vole, who was running for his little life. And I hope that the... I hope the owl got fed. Support for KAXE comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org. And support comes from the Loft Event Center in downtown Bemidji, providing multi-purpose event space that accommodates groups of all sizes, up to 150 people, for wedding receptions, business meetings, concerts, and more. Info about the Loft Event Center rates and packages at BemidjiLodge.com.
Slight chance of drizzle and snow today with high temperatures 35 to 38 falling through this afternoon, and overnight lows 1 to 7 degrees with blustery north winds 15 to 30 miles an hour. Tomorrow Wednesday looks sunny, 11 to 16 during the day, and then evening lows 5 below to 1 above. And we have some snow coming in, hopefully, on Thursday, 1 to 4 inches possible, 24 to 32 degrees. Right now, looking around the region, John, as you have said, it's unseasonably warm. Coolest spot I'm seeing is Hibbing at 34 degrees, 36 and some snow in Park Rapids right now, Bagley at 36, 37 in Bemidji, Grand Rapids at 36, and Brainerd reporting 38 degrees this morning. Woof.
Yeah, that's pretty unusual for January. Time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, January 13th.
Micah Hunter Small.
37 today, his birthday, and he is living in Minneapolis. And Suzanne Derby has a birthday today. Suzanne lives in Aiken County.
That's right. We heard from Suzanne yesterday. She splits her time between Tamarack, Minnesota and Rochester, Minnesota, and has been a longtime member. Suzanne, thank you so much for that. We also had a call this week to listen to.
Hi, this is Sally Birdrood, and I just wondered if you could give a late announcement sometime to say happy birthday to Clayton White from Pequot Lake, Minnesota. He's 81. Today on Sunday. Thank you.
We missed it Sunday, but now we can say happy birthday.
Clayton White, happy birthday, 81. I hope to make 81 myself one day, 4 years from now. I'm not going to cheat.
Happy birthday, happy anniversary. We've got more student reports coming up next. Here's Robert Finley.
Thank you.
soul singer, songwriter, and guitarist Robert Finley there. He had decades of performing semi-professionally, then a huge time away from music, and now is back on the scene. Heard his daughter in that song. I want to thank you.
Lovely. Yeah, nice blues tune.
Yeah.
We received support from Klockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 8 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday from noon to 6. More info at klockowbrewing.com.
Our listeners love supporting the businesses that support KEXE. If you are interested in connecting with KEXE listeners, you can call us or text 218-326-1234 to learn about sponsorship opportunities. Big thanks to all of our current business supporters.
And we receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at coleranebank.com, member FDIC.
Tune in about 8:40. We've got Pam Perry joining us, going to be talking about winter bird feeding. Stay tuned for that. At 1 o'clock, On the River, our volunteer-hosted program, DJ Ironsides, and our volunteer Sarah Sarah tonight at 7 o'clock.
Funding for Phenology Talkbacks is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology Talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. Our next report comes from the Writer's Retreat at Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hey, this is Emma Kipley-Ogman with the Legends and Lore Winter Writer's Retreat at Long Lake Conservation Center. During our visit from January 4th to the 7th, the low temperature was 16 degrees Fahrenheit and the high was 35. This week we noticed many birds, a female hairy woodpecker pecking out a rhythm on an old birch tree, red-bellied woodpeckers on the trees near the dining hall, pileated woodpeckers calling and flying through the trees, a raven calling and another one picking up and flying off with a snowball in its beak, blue jays, white and red-breasted nuthatches, a pine grosbeak, and black-capped chickadees. We saw a vole scampering across the snow and a red squirrel chasing a gray squirrel away from the leftover pancakes. We saw deer tracks and scat. We noticed birch seeds on the snow and bright green and orange lichens of many textures on the trees. We noticed thaw circles at the bases of the trees. On our way here, despite temperatures in the 20s, rain fell in freezing pellets, coating car windshields and stinging our faces. One morning, the rime frost from an overnight fog outlined every oak leaf like a crayon drawing and every twig and needle. We had a great time writing and sharing, hearing from remarkable local storytellers Beth Howdala, Hope Flanagan, and Michael Goldberg, and learning with the naturalists of Long Lake, hiking, skiing, and making pine needle baskets. And we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, and live connected.
Thank you, Emma. Nice report. Good things happening down at Long Lake all the time. Lots of woodpeckers, vole running across the snow, and a red squirrel chasing a gray one away from the pancakes. Red squirrels store food, and so they're very aggressive about their territory. Gray squirrels don't store a lot of food, and they sort of get along communally and just kind of find food where they can. But the red squirrels are really protective about territory and about their food supplies, and so they oftentimes get into conflict with the gray squirrels. We've got time for one more before the top of the hour. Our next report comes from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls Middle School.
This is Emily
and Megan reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phrenology report for the week of January 11th.
There was a single robin aggressively chasing cedar waxwings away from a fruit on a tree.
We have seen adult and juvenile bald eagles along with crows feeding on a roadkill deer.
We had sightings of a rough-legged hawk and a sharp-shinned hawk, which were birds 70 and 71 on our bird species count for the school year.
We got to see pictures of a juvenile sharp-shinned hawk feeding on a house sparrow it had caught. We learned that they must pluck the feathers off their prey before eating.
Our feeder activity has really increased with purple finches, juncos, chickadees, goldfinches, red and white breasted nuthatches, cardinals, blue jays, red-bellied woodpeckers, and downy woodpeckers being frequent visitors.
Our newest discovery this week was a tiny fairy pin fungus growing on a turkey tail fungus. These tiny black stalks are parasitic fungus.
A few classmates spotted a deer mouse while they were skiing. It quickly dove under the snow, headed back to the subnivian zone.
We did have observations of juncos hopping into a snow tunnel made by rabbits near some shrubs.
A couple different people found small holes in the snow that were probably air vents that led to tunnels used by voles.
A classmate had a situation where a group of blue jays were loudly alerting others to their presence while they were out by the bird feeder.
We had a fun sighting of a gray squirrel balanced on the tiny tips of branches, eating the small seeds of a Amur maple.
This is our report for this week. Until next week,
keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Emily and Megan, nice job as always. Chad, thank you. Do a great job.